Here's Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles, with a Miracle Minute.
Angel mystic Atira was born with an amazing gift. Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And I want to remind my listeners to call in at 1:30 today at 1-877-876-5227. And I'll give the number later again. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about mediumship. It's interesting. I'm teaching a development class. And then, you know, the minute you start teaching a class, you start learning a lot about what you're teaching. Because sometimes you've done something a long time for yourself, or you have your own way of doing it, and you don't think to break it down till you start teaching it. And my mediumship is one of those things that's that way. I've heard my guide since I was 5 years old, so I've developed sort of this cooperative working relationship that I actually probably had not analyzed deeply until I started to teach. Because I originally started to teach very traditional mediumship, meaning that it's based largely on what you read in James Van Praagh, John Holland, many, many other books out there on absolute mediumship, about physical mediumship where you're going to go on trance, teaching to set a seance, or teaching to do the steps that come before that sometimes, which are automatic writing and different ways that you can get communication from your angels, guides, and masters. But I hadn't really thought till my class, till a student asked me, how do Dom and you work, Don Solis, Dom, work? And I said, well, like everybody works. And they go, well, but what is that? And so when I started to try and break it down, I found it very interesting, because the answer to it was strange to me, because I thought everybody would hear in the same way I do. So when I started talking about, for me, often I actually hear a voice like outside myself, as if I'm having a conversation with another person. I will hear the voice just like he's speaking right to the right side of me. And then sometimes, and why it's different at times, I'm not so sure. Usually it's the energy around me or the environment around me. If I'm in a more crowded place, I will tend to hear him inside my head more than outside. I think because it's easier to distinguish hearing him. But it's interesting, because then I started trying to explain it, that it is for me, when I'm doing mediumship with Dom, and or sometimes hearing other people's angels, guides, and masters, it will be like when you read to yourself, you read aloud in your head, and you're reading to yourself. And it was interesting, because some of the people in my class says, I don't understand that, because I don't hear myself when I read. And I was kind of stunned, because when I'm reading a book, I actually hear it in my head. I hear the words as if someone is reading aloud. And so it was sort of one of those aha moments that perhaps not everybody reads that way or experiences that way. So it became interesting, like, how do I tell another person what it's like to do the mediumship I do if they don't have a frame of reference? So if you read to yourself and it's like you hear the voice in your head, then that's very much what it's like. If you don't hear a voice in your head when you're reading to yourself, it would be like hearing someone read out loud at a distance, a little more. It almost has a little echo to it. Or it would be like sometimes when you're thinking something out and you're talking to yourself sometimes you talk to yourself in your head. So it became interesting to sort of ask different students how they are experiencing their mediumship, because I found out, obviously, that my norm is not everyone's norm. So the way that spirit communicates with people will be different, obviously, with every individual. And I think it's different because the more I research this, not just from books I've read, but really, truly, I think we're all wired a little differently. I think everybody's synapses jump a little different and a little different wavelength. And I think that has a lot to do with how we may connect or interact with spirit. I know that for me, electromagnetic things, you've heard me talk about it many times, that, you know, I've gone through a lot of portable phones because I affect the batteries. I think that we use electromagnetic energy that flows through our body in some way to help with this connection. I know that if you read about old-time mediums from the 1800s, they talk about having people as batteries in the room, people who are just like the little Energizer bunny that you see on the commercial, that actually generate energy which they then allow the medium or spirits to use. So I think sometimes we're drawing on the current around us as well. When I'm in seance, I very much notice that as soon as we connect the circle, connecting the energy to each person in the circle, when there is six or less, it's a very different vibration. When it's 12, the vibration seems to be more vibrant or more connected, unless you do have someone who is specifically using the energy and to generate energy as a what is called a battery. So really experiencing phenomena through mediumship, I think, is very fascinating because I think as individuals, the energy is used a little differently than when we are in a group and we're in a connective state. Now, certainly, I believe every time you're doing mediumship, you're in connection with someone. You're in connection with someone who has passed over or an angel guide or master. Or you are connected to the person you're reading for or you're with in any kind of setting. So there certainly is, you know, that old saying that, you know, we're all connected, that everybody's one. And so I do think that there are circuits. Our circuits are connected. And the stronger that there is a recognition between them or closer in vibration, the easier it is to experience phenomena. For example, they often talk about twins having this natural kind of mediumship that goes on between them. And I think that's true because they're, you know, they were together in the womb, that they're probably their energy vibrates within 2 to 5 degrees. And the closer that one vibrates in energy to each other, the more connected we seem to be. And everything has a vibration. You ask any scientist, they'll talk about that everything has a vibration. Illnesses have their own vibration. That's why they are now looking into vibrational medicine, because they're believing that what you do is find the vibration of the illness and then add the vibration of the healthy when you're not ill, the healthiness, and that it somehow affects that energy. So this interesting connection of how mediums work, I think, is so very fascinating. One of the things that I thought was interesting as we talked in my class is that as you talk to different mediums, you find out that everybody's technique, it may be generally the same of how they may be connecting to their guides or how they may be using, facilitating a communication. But how the interpretation, the symbols and the messages we get are often very interesting and different. Now, John Edwards, I think, is very fascinating because when I first saw him on Crossing Over, I was fascinated because I was watching him. And I found myself going, oh, my God, he gets things like I do. And I could see his interaction with spirit, which was exciting because when you find your own species, you get so excited to see somebody else work. And I'm very excited when I see other mediums work. You can always learn every chance you get to go to any spiritualist church, anywhere where they practice mediumship. Hay House certainly has a lot of great mediums that they have on tour. Anytime you get to watch any great clairvoyant or medium, you will learn something. You will get some kind of aha that you can take back into your own private work. But as I watched John Edwards, particularly, first of all, to see him on TV, it was interesting that he talked about how his guides tend to use family members to get names or family members to get job descriptions for people, or he would use things off TV because he was a kid that grew up with a lot of TV. And so they would show him different things. They would show him, like, Days of Our Lives, or they would show him certain things that he knew had to do with TV, what were symbolic and became his cosmic vocabulary, his cosmic alphabet, if you will, to give messages. So spirit tends to, I think, more do what we call mind transfer, mind thought transfer. I was reading something from the 1800s about the Summerland, like where you would go when you're passed over. And it talked about they don't really talk, that they do, you know, from mind to mind. And yet, it is thought. So it is formed in word patterns, but also in symbols. And so I had to sit down with my guide and have a little talk because I thought, how much am I really hearing? And how much am I really seeing and just recognizing from symbols because I've done it so long? For example, when I was first trying to learn to type, I would hit all the wrong keys. I just could not seem to get the hang of it. I still occasionally hit wrong keys, but now I've done it so long that it really is second nature, and I tend to, other than my dyslexia, do pretty good on a typewriter. It has become somewhat automatic. And I really discovered when I sat down and said, okay, Dom, let's go back to kindergarten here. Let's go back and really break it down how it really works. And that's when I really got some big ahas, and that is that I do see a lot in symbols. I didn't realize it because, to me, it happens so fast in such a combination that I had not really registered that I'm actually seeing, hearing, and sometimes just knowing at the same time. So I'm real conscious for this last week. I've been practicing, paying attention to it more. And so I do think that probably most mediums get all of the above. They will see something. They will then try to describe it. They will then hear something and add to that. And usually probably it is a thought transfer more than verbally for a lot of mediums. I actually called some of my other mediumistic friends, and most of them do not hear outside their head. They hear mainly inside their head. There are a couple that I talk to that hear outside like me, but most of them, the majority that I started calling and talking to, hear as if in thought patterns or thought sounds, like someone's talking to them in their head. They also certainly get symbols, or they will see words. Now, a few years ago, a new thing happened, a new phenomenon happened to me, and that is I would start seeing words over people's heads, which I thought was an interesting thing, you know, just like in the comic strips where you see the little message thing over somebody's head. I would see words like liar. I would see trust issues. I would see fear. I would see usually one or two words over someone's head. And it began out of nowhere, and it is intermittent. It is not something that I would say I can control or not. It seems to be a new phenomenon that's sort of like seeing a billboard over somebody. And it varies. It's not always negative, just negative things. It can be positive things as well. So So I think mediumship expands, of course, the more you practice. As I was trying to talk to my class about this, I really tried to come up with some exercises that they could experience. And since I found out that not everybody hears when they read a book, they don't read it and hear it in their head, it sort of changed how I would have to teach what I was going to teach. So I came up with a way to try and teach my students by taking time and going into like a meditation and seeing a blank chalkboard or video screen and then seeing the words go across it. Like when you're all too young to remember the bouncing ball, but when you were a kid, they used to have cartoons with songs on them. They'd say, follow the bouncing ball, and the words to the song would be on the screen. So very much that technique, I think, could help a person develop by looking at a screen in your mind, in your third eye, and letting that unfold to see whatever it is, whether it's a symbol, you know, a picture of someone, a word. I also really am big on reminding people that if you keep hearing something repeated, if you keep hearing a word repeated over and over during the week, that's probably a message from Spirit, because Spirit will repeat it till you get it. And sometimes, you know, they get a little pushy towards the end. I always say take the feather, not the cosmic 2x4. But trying to practice your mediumship is very, very important. I encourage people, if you are not a person that actually hears, automatic writing is a very good medium for you to start to connect with your guides. Or the use of angel cards, tarot cards, any of those forms of things. Again, I'm not a big fan of the Ouija board. The only reason is I think people play with it as a game rather than a instrument and tool for development. Now, if you use, Doreen does have an angel board, and if you do decide to use a Ouija board, please use Divine White Light. Please set intent and call someone that you want to come in. You know, call your angels, call some higher developed soul. Please do not play with a Ouija board or angel board or any kind of thing like that as if it's a game. I take it very seriously, and I encourage you to, because people do get things attached to them. People can get negative entities attached to you if you are open to that. And sometimes we think we're not open to it, but if we go into our fears, and everybody has fears, we can accidentally get something adhered to us. You know, it's better to practice using being coated with Teflon, angelic Teflon, so if it comes near you and it's not for your highest good, it slides off, and work towards that kind of, you know, really good connection with your gatekeeper, your spirit guide, or master, or angel, so that as you develop, you use lots and lots of precautions. As I started talking about mediumship and the different types and how I was hoping to use my connection with Dom to be able to teach, I really realized that other mediums get things in different ways too. I don't know if you've ever seen George Anderson. He's a very gifted medium. I believe he had a near-death experience before he developed. He's written several books. And he tends to take a piece of paper, and he has a pen in his hand, but he's not really doing automatic writing. It's really doing circles, the pen is. All the time he's getting messages. It's almost like he uses that his hand, the motor function of his hand, as an abstract diversion from his consciousness, so that his consciousness can then open the door for his mediumship. It's very, very fascinating if you get to do some research on him. It's another person that I think that you'll learn a lot from. There are a set of twins, and I apologize for not knowing their name. They're fairly well known. Now, they're interesting because I saw them on the show The Other Side several years ago, and they give readings in tandem. one does one part and one does the other. In other words, they almost finish each other's sentences. However, each gift within the reading is very different. Like one just brings over past over loved ones. The other one deals with the other realms. So that would be an interesting type of mediumship to review and look into. There is a mediumship league that I found out about, and I don't know if you have to be registered or not, but I think it would be fascinating to do a little more research and see, or at least write them and see if you could find out more about them. It is the Mediumship League, and it was formed and founded at Camp Lilydale in 1879. And I bet you could go to www.nsac.org or to the LilydaleAssembly.org and find more out about that. I think if you can find any organizations like mediumship leagues or mediumship study facilities on the web, certainly that is a source to learn more about how to go forward with your mediumship. Now, mental mediumship covers a lot of phenomena. It covers clairvoyance, clairaudience, that means hearing, clairsentient, smelling. It actually covers psychometry, inspirational speaking, precognition, a lot of the forms, then certainly trance, conscious trance, unconscious trance. There are two different types. There is a light state of trance, I'm told now, and then, because I always thought if you're in trance, it was unconscious and you were there you were. But they say there is actually for a first type of trance, which is conscious, meaning that the medium does hear, and then unconscious, where the medium does not hear. So during these kinds of trance, physical mediumship certainly means that you may see transfiguration, or other things that actually overlays over the physical face of someone. You may see their hands change, their voice changes. So there's a lot of things with mental mediumship. Now, under mental mediumship, I'm also told that automatic writing falls under mental mediumship. In other words, the pen is controlled by the mental forces, and so therefore spirit's still using the body and going through and doing automatic writing. Now, table tipping, I'm not so sure, but I would say it's probably under mental mediumship as well as direct voice mediumship. So there's so much that falls under this umbrella of mediumship that it's a study in its own self, and I certainly encourage you to read some of the really, really well-known mediums, Arthur Ford, Eileen Garrett. I think it's good to read a combination of past ones but now ones, because we are finding a new science as we go into mediumship. I would have considered myself certainly a conscious medium until I just started the development class, which now I've had certainly had experience where I am unconscious and a spirit does come through me. Certainly also Roberts' works, Joan Roberts' works, absolutely fabulous, Roberts' work. She did some really great work with the Seth work that's out there. So, again, if you want to call in and talk about mediumship, you've got some questions, you've got some things that you've been wondering about, or you've had some experiences with some mediumship or clairvoyance or any dreams, things that you really have questions about, you can call in today at 1-877-876-5227, and I'll try and help you with it, and we'll have an adventure in spirituality today. But as I was doing some research for my class, this class has really made me do more homework, because I'm really well read, but I'm finding that they seem to find things and come up with questions that I have not quite delved into in my research, in some of my research. Because there's so much, if you go back into the 1800s, there was definitely what I would consider some different type of mediumship that we probably do not see that much anymore. I don't think we see very much direct voice mediumship, meaning, or where there's multi-direct voices. Albert Best is a very famous medium from England who would have 5 or 6 voices talking at the same time in a room. And people would be able to know, okay, that sounds like John Wayne. They would be able to recognize their cousin's voices, and they would be able to have a message from them. And so that kind of mediumship, we don't seem to hear much, or we don't seem to see it on the television very much, or in the media very much. We do see, certainly, the John Edwards, James Van Praagh, John Holland, mediumship like that, Gordon Smith, fabulous Scottish medium. We see that more one-on-one where they come out and give message of passed over loved ones. We see mainly mediumship used in the form of talking to passed over loved ones or people who have passed over, not necessarily family members, but friends, other people have come in. And within our seance circle, we certainly have had some other spirits come in that, for one of them was Abraham Lincoln. And someone saw this apparition, got information from the apparition, and so the next step is certainly to try and document that, because it was things that we don't in particular necessarily know. So when you have an experience where a spirit comes to you and says certain things, or anything, I say document, document, document. Keep a journal, keep information, try to research it. Do not take anything that a spirit says on face value. Really, I really warn against that. Often people will talk about, oh, a spirit told me to do this or told me to do that. You have to practice. You have to use discernment. You have to make sure that you trust the spirit, that you know enough about this experience before you just go and follow it blindly. Even with Dom, you got to remember, I've had him since 5 years old. I have road tested this poor spirit pretty much by, you know, knowing that I can walk down in a counter in a health food store and use my hand to scan, and when it gets hot, I stop, and then I read the label, and then I ask spirit more questions. I discern. You don't just take it that, you know, oh, that's the one, and let's go. You have to discern. You have to ask questions. Then you have to ask, how many do I take a day? How long do I take it? These things, if you're using it in the context where you're experiencing that kind of usage of your spiritual gifts. Carolyn Meese, who is, I think, one of the most gifted medical intuitives, even with her work, she has it verified usually by a doctor. So it's not something that you just, you know, you're developing at home and you want to start using whatever spirit's taken and giving you. You know, if it tells you Aunt Martha, you know, has a toothache and she needs to see a dentist, then you need to ask Aunt Martha a few questions, check, and then go forward. Maybe she does have a tooth problem. Do not just take spiritual word blindly. It's very, very important to discern. And if it's the right spirit, they'll want you to. They want you to learn to have an absolute trusting, connected relationship. And so one of the ways you develop that relationship is by genuine seeking and asking and getting it proven over and over and consistently until you have a pattern and an absolute personal relationship. Think about it as if you're developing a friendship with your best friend, because you are. And so best friends, you learn a lot about your best friend. You know where they were born most of the time. You know their emotional range. You know how to tell if something's wrong when they walk in a room. You have a running relationship that you know that person at a very intimate level. And so that's what happens with your guides as well. Maybe you can't see them, but you can sense them. You can know. You can know if you're off center, if you're out of sync, and aren't quite connected. I have a big rule for me. I don't read. If I'm sick, I don't read. If I really know, like, I'm out of sync for some other reason, once in a while, earthquakes or Mount St. Helens, when it blew, I knew it disrupted my energy too much that I would not be in sync. September 11 interrupted a lot of us, a lot of our emotional stability. So, of course, we did not read or do work for a long time, for at least a week, until we got more in sync and the vibration of the universe kind of balanced itself as well. So So certainly you have to listen to your own emotional antenna and make sure that you're not absorbing things and getting mixed messages. One of the things they talk about in mediumship with spiritualism is they talk about messages being colored. And I really have to say, as I explored other readers, I found it very frustrating that I would go to not tell anyone who I was, and I would go to have a reading. And I found a lot of readers were using the technique of trying to get the client to tell them things. And it's sort of called feeding the reader, and I think that's not a good thing. I don't like it. It's a way of, I don't think they're genuinely trying to be fraudulent. I think it's just the way they were taught to do readings or to get hits or to follow a thread. And subconsciously, they're using body language. They're using techniques of sort of getting the client to feed the reader. And I don't think that's a good thing. I really encourage my clients when they call, they just get to say for the first few minutes reading while spirit's talking to them, yes, no, and I don't know. Unless I ask, if I get to a spot where I'm stuck and spirit won't let me move forward, I may ask a name. I might ask something, but really, truly, for the first few minutes of the reading, it's yes, no, and I don't know. And that way they know I'm getting it first from spirit. I get, you know, like specific dates. I can remember one time I was doing a show in Portland, a TV show, and I was going to go on this TV show, and they had a lady who was going to be the co-interviewer, and she came in, show me what you do. She says, I don't really believe in this stuff, but, you know, kind of show me what you do. And I said, oh, okay. So I told her, I said, say yes, no, and I don't know for a few minutes. And I started talking about her childhood. And when I got to 7 years old, I said, well, at 7 years old, something traumatic's happened, and you just fired everybody. You fired God, everybody. And it was just like the world stood still. And she got up, and she went into the dressing room, and she just stopped talking to me. She just didn't say yes, no, I don't know. And she just abruptly got up and walked away from me, and I said, well, obviously, I hit a spot. Something, you know, must have upset her. And she got herself together and came back. She says, why did you do that? And I said, why did you say 7 years old? And I said, because that's what they said. And I said, I actually think you had a loss of some kind. And sure enough, her dad had passed when she was seven. So it was very interesting. It sure changed the whole dynamics of the show. When we went on the air, she told what had happened in the green room, and it became a great teaching opportunity. Rather than prove to me you're psychic, prove to me you're who you say you are, and you know I'm going to be the skeptic. And worse than that is sometimes I can deal with a good skeptic. It's the people that really just want to bash you, and that you could never convince, that would never be open-minded. You cannot convince somebody who truly believes against spiritualism or against anything. You can never change somebody who's already made up their mind. So if you have questions today or you want a little reading, call in at 1-877-876-5227. And I totally have to tell you, we're having such a beautiful day here in Seattle. I'm sure a lot of you are out there enjoying that sun and might not be tuned into your computer today. I hope you're enjoying it. But I try to use all my shows to be teaching, and it's important that I have feedback from people who are listening. I think that people get absorbed in hearing me talk, but I really think having input from other people is very, very important because, just like in my class, viewpoints are different. And so each time we hear someone's personal experience with a medium or personal experience with a reader or how they get messages, it's very, very phenomenal to learn from everybody. Another thing that I think is interesting that I don't see, and we certainly in our circle my class that I teach, we have a trumpet. We have the metal trumpet that was used in the 1800s. It has moved, but it has not floated across the room yet. And aports have not come through it, so we're waiting for that exciting experience. But there certainly has been all kinds of phenomena happen in other circles. Tables have moved. Mary Elena is a incredible Mexican artist, and she was in a circle for several years. She knew Ruth Montgomery. She sat circle for 8 or 9 years, and they would have rose petals rain down. So certainly I would love to experience some of that phenomena. However, I have not experienced that yet. So there's lots of potential yet to come. As you are working on your personal mediumship, it's very important to keep a journal, because you will get things, and you might write down that in your meditation or in your communication you saw, you know, a blue Chevy, and then you saw somebody going upstairs, and then you saw boxes in your living room, and you know, you may not connect to any of it. You may think, I had the worst, you know, session with spirit. None of it made any sense. And not write it down, and you won't remember. But if you wrote it down, say in a week or two, you might go, I came home, and there was a blue Chevy parked in front of my house. I went in my house, and there were boxes. And I went upstairs, and it was somebody's birthday, or something else was going on. Things all relate, but it may be on a time delay switch. So certainly journaling is a very important thing to try and do. And to listen to spirit. Spirit really tries to direct us in subtle ways. I just had someone who said, you know, Atira, every time I turned around, there was an ad on TV about security systems, and to the point that I did not want to watch TV. That I was so sick of hearing about, you know, ADD or whatever it is, and, you know, security system. It was driving me crazy. So much so, she says, I just absolutely couldn't watch TV. And she said, never thinking that it would have anything to do with me. And so she ignored it. And about 2 days later, she lived in a condominium. 2 days later, the condo below her and to her, the side of her, got broken into. And she says, boy, did I decide that either I wanted a security system or I had to make my condo more secure. She said, spirit was good to me. It didn't turn out to be my apartment, but it could have been. And she goes, I know that spirit was trying to tell me you might want to get your place more secure. So it's messages like that sometimes that we don't pay attention to. We're very good at dismissing, talking ourselves out of that we saw something. Even in seance, it's very interesting to me, even in a seance setting where we are developing and teaching, it's interesting to me that students will not verbalize sometimes what they see. And it's a shame, because when they do say, oh, you know, I felt like somebody touched my face, somebody else will say, oh, something just touched my face too. Or, oh, I'm feeling pressure on my head. Someone else, oh, I'm feeling that same pressure. People tend to discount their experiences. And I think that's because we're taught to ignore it, or that we have such vivid imaginations, or we pretended too much when we were a child, that we are still shushing ourselves. And I'm going to encourage you, don't shush yourself. Really pay attention to the experiences that you are having, and the opportunity to be expanded and learn more about your abilities and your gifts. Look in your local neighborhood. I have to tell you, I just went for another reason, to get transcripts from college that I haven't gone in a lot of years, but I needed these transcripts for a course I'm taking. And I went there and got my transcripts, and I said, well, you know, do you have a current catalog? I think I want to look at it. And I look at this current catalog, and they have one class on parapsychology. I'm so excited, I can't wait to go take it. They also had one on understanding death and transition based on Kobler-Ross's work. So I think that would actually be fascinating to go take. Look into your community colleges. You might be surprised what you're going to see now. In fact, this particular college, Highline Community College, actually at one time had a whole herbal course you could take. You no longer offer it, but please check out your local colleges. Again, local spiritualist churches, some unity churches. Look in your neighborhoods and see, and if you don't have places, decide to try perhaps to start your own group. Even a lot of bookstores will have talks, or they will have guest speakers, or they will have groups that practice meditation and things. It is something that you have to dedicate yourself to. I really do not believe very many people just add water, instant metaphysics, and they instantly get the gift. Even though I know that James Van Praagh and John Holland both had car accidents to kind of reawaken their gift, it would not be my choice to have that kind of accident. Certainly Danny and Brinkley got his by getting electrocuted. Again, not the fastest way or the brightest way that I would do it. I think that we can have spiritual wake-up calls without any of those kind of extreme measures. I think if you ask spirit into your life, if you dedicate time to it, that's the one thing I think that's the hardest to get anybody to understand. My students, even when I teach workshops, people want to come to a workshop, a weekend workshop or a week-long workshop, and practice, and they're jazzed, and they go home, and for like maybe 2 weeks, they work in it. Third week, they start tapering off. Fourth week is back to mundania, and they are not as dedicated and committed to what it takes to really develop. Because of my wonderful guide, I guess, I grew up differently. I grew up with him playing spiritual games with me, which I thought were games, so they were fun, so we played them all the time. You know, we would play, what color is that person? Is that person happy, sad? Are they in pain? I played things like that, and I didn't realize it was really teaching me how to read auras, how to feel the emotion that people emit, and how to know how I could help them. I grew up with spending time in meditation. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I said, well, Dom, when I was very young, used to have me look at dandelions. You know, the dandelions, before, when they've got all the little seed pods, you know, when you like to blow them and the seeds fly all over. And he would ask me to look at that, to study that dandelion. And I would study it, I'd study for a while. But I'm 5, 6, and 7, and you know, the temptation to blow those seeds around would get the better of me, and then I'd start over on another one. But that was how he started actually teaching me how to meditate, or to look at like a bloom, a flower of some kind, apple blossoms for me in particular in the beginning, just to look at it, till I looked at it so long that you just became into it. You would just kind of melt, your vision would blur, and you would just go into the color in the flower. And so when I was in my 20s and kind of re-woke up, and people were saying, you know, you got to sit cross-legged and you got to om and you got to, you know, to meditate, I was going like, man, I don't get it. I really tried to learn to meditate like that. But for me, it doesn't work that way. For me, it's more sit and look out a window, and pretty soon you're gone into the meditation. And I think everybody can learn their own form of meditation. I'm sure a formal meditation that is traditional, where you're really setting in that more conducive flow of energy pretzel experience. Probably for some people that's the answer. However, I do question the lotus position, because you are crossing your legs. And I do find that when you cross your legs or arms, it does shut down the flow of energy. It also make a statement to spirit, blocking. So I think that's a fascinating thing even to notice and look at. So find the way that's most comfortable for you, what works for you. And I tell my clients and my students, don't do it till you're irritated. Don't make it something that is so much work for a person, because you won't do it. You won't stick with it. So make it something that's playful. I don't care if you sit out on your step and blow bubbles for 5 minutes, because somewhere in that action of blowing bubbles, you will begin to de-stress and you will begin to meditate, because you will actually get almost mesmerized by the iridescence on the bubbles. And you become open and you will start getting information. So it is receiving, open your channel to receiving data. It is not necessarily in the formal setting of just sitting down to do automatic writing, you know, blanking your mind out. Oh my God, you know, the minute I try to blank my mind out and sit in a traditional type of meditation, all of a sudden those dishes need to be done this minute. Trust me, dishes are the last thing I would think of doing in my whole world. However, the minute you try and quiet the mind, that egocentric something in us, that little critic part of us, gets real busy with finding every chore that you've never done in your whole life needs to be done in that 5 seconds you're trying to take to quiet your mind and become one again with spirit. So you just have to find the technique that opens the door for you the best, and then let spirit come through. And sometimes I tell my students, I think it's very important just to write down what you get. Even if for a while it's mind chatter, even if it is do the dishes, I would write that down. Then whatever comes in next, you will start getting a flow. When spirit starts talking to you, it seems to come for me in 3 to 5 words, phrases. So 3 to 5 word little flows. And then when you start developing more, it goes very, very fast. And here's the key. Ask them to repeat it. At first, I'd get so frustrated because it would go so fast. And it didn't dawn on me to ask them to say it over again and to slow down and change the volume or the sound. And we can ask. We can ask. Say, slow it down. Go slower. Be quieter. Repeat. And I'm often asked, Steiner talks about, he says that most of the messages come through the organs, physical organs of the human body, and that he believes that it does not come in the spoken language. He believes it comes in symbols and thought patterns. And he said, because how could it come if you are reading for someone who's German or from some other language? And I think it's a very valid point that there might be something to what Steiner says. I've not had enough research to agree with them completely. I do believe it comes in different languages, absolutely. There are times when I'm talking to the angelic realm, and it comes in sounds and tones and singing sometimes, and not in anything I could repeat. I could never tell you what it sounds like. And I have to ask them to then interpret it for me, make it into something I can understand. And I have had things where we the other night in seance got something that we thought was a certain phrase. I can't remember right now. I apologize. And the more we listened to what they thought it was, another person said, "Oh no, I think it's something something," and just by changing it a little bit, the person that was in the room spoke Arabic and says, "Oh yeah, I know what that means." Another phrase. It wasn't Arabic. It wasn't in English at all, but it sounded similar to something in English. And finally, we said it over and over enough to get that it really was something else. And she knew exactly what it meant because it was from her passed over loved one. So don't second guess. Sometimes you just have to say it, especially when you don't know what it is. I can remember one time reading for a lady who I did not know. I mean, she had an accent, but I didn't know. She could have been Austrian, Croatian, whatever. And I finally said, "You know, I keep hearing some words, and I don't know what they are." So I said them to her. I said, "And I'm sure I'm pronunciating them very badly." And it turned out it was German, and it was exactly something that she knew, understood what it meant, was thrilled. It was from her grandmother. So even if you think you get something that you think is gobbledygook, sometimes it's okay to try and write it down as best you can and keep records of it. Or if you're in a group setting, just say it. It's, sounds like this, and say it. If you hear a song repeated, say it. You know, if you see your Aunt Myrtle standing in a cornfield, say, does anybody have an Aunt Myrtle? Oh, or someone named Myrtle. Or maybe it's the cornfield. Symbols and signs, ways we see things, we get confused, we start to discount them, we can't put them in context, and so we don't know what to do with them, we let them slide by, and it's a big mistake because it might be something someone is really, really waiting to hear. So the more you connect, the more you trust yourself, the more you keep records, because you truly will develop your own vocabulary. Dream books are also helpful. Kevin Tadashi, which is now the CEO and head of ARE, which I will be interviewing on July the 5th. Very excited about that. He has written a really incredible dream book on symbols and symbology. And I found when I looked at that book, I found that there was a lot of symbols, obviously, that are cosmically generic that spirit uses for not just me, but other people. Sort of maybe the cosmic yellow pages. That when I was reading what it meant to me, he had in his dream book. And so for me, like when I see water in anything, it's emotion usually. So if I see somebody's house flooding, that means there's emotional overflow going on in their home. If I see something that someone feels like they're drowning, usually that means that they're emotionally overwhelmed. So you will start to see these things that relate to you. One of the greatest ways to practice is on all your friends, and you don't have to tell them you're practicing. So say you're going to see your girlfriend at lunch. So before you go to lunch, sit down, and you haven't talked over the week. You just said, hi, we're going to have lunch on Thursday, whatever, right? So sit down and say, how does she feel? What will she wear? What color do I think I see her in? What do I think she's going to order? Now, some of this will be, sure, you know your friend, so, okay, I know she drinks a double latte, you know, whatever. But some of it won't. You will, and I think she's going to talk about, okay, James and Patrick and somebody else, and, I see this and that. And she's been worrying about her mother, and I feel like her mother called her last week. Write down these things, and then kind of check in with your friend. You don't have to tell her. You say, well, how's your mom? Have you heard from her? She'll answer those questions. If you don't want to share and she doesn't know your woo-woo, you know, it's okay. Practice every time the phone rings. Have a sense of it, you know. I'm really actually very, very good with telemarketers without looking at your, what do they call it, the ID thing. I just can tell that it's not anybody out, you know, it's a telemarketer. I don't want to talk to them. But you'll get a sense, or you'll know the name. If you practice the phone thing, you'll get so you know the name of the person before you pick it up every time. That's the funnest thing. I used to play that all the time. Dom was one of the games Dom and I used to play. So those kinds of tools are wonderful things. Learning how to analyze or get a sense of and a knowing of and your psychic intuitive energy into even your workplace, you know. What color will your employees wear that day? What do you think their mood will be? How can you change the mood? What is your co-creation going on there? Are you co-creating a good day or are you co-creating another crappy day? All of this is part of becoming clairvoyant and psychic. The more that you project and clean up your energy field, the better your work becomes. The more you declutter things from the day, and then start afresh new. It is really, truly a matter of absolute practice, practice, practice. Everybody wants to be psychic and do things, but nobody wants to practice. Make it fun. Say you have five or six friends, and you make an agreement that you're going to watch something on TV at 5 o'clock on Wednesday night, and you're not going to tell them what you're going to watch. But you're going to watch it, and you're going to ask your friend to tune in. And then say, for 10 minutes, you're going to tune in. They're going to tune in to you. And then 10 minutes, you're going to tune in to them. You will start, if you don't get what kind of movie it is or what show it is at first, you might not, but you might get. I heard it was like, okay, I think it was, you know, shoot 'em up kind of show, and I saw a car chase, or I saw this or that. It's really fun to practice. It's like playing with one of those puzzles where you have to put all the pieces together, jigsaw puzzles, till you see the big picture. So I hope I've given you lots of tools today to go forward and work in developing your ability. And I've learned a lot, I have to say. I thought everybody heard their guide like I hear mine. But the more you ask, and I do believe you can ask them also, because I started working with someone who did not hear like I do. And I said to their guide, I said, could you make them hear it so they hear it in their head more? So they hear the sounds and the tones. And can you make it very clear to them when you're going to show them a symbol or a color or whatever it is? And the more we practiced that in our time that we were developing as I was working with this person, after about 2 weeks, they came to class and they said, I heard it in my head just like you said it would be. So it really is sometimes going to kindergarten and practicing. I've enjoyed this hour. I look forward to next week. Hopefully my guest will come next week and we'll have an adventure with another clairvoyant. Until then, remember to let your heart light shine, to light your way and the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of angels. Blessings.
Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles and the Angels and Miracles Good Newsletter, can be found at angelscribe.com.